There we go.
Alrighty. Four preachers met for a friendly gathering, and during the conversation, one preacher said, "Our people come to us and pour out their hearts. Sometimes they confess their sins and share their struggles, and it seems to help them stay on the straight and narrow. We should do the same, you know, brothers. Confession is good for the soul." Well, it took a while, but in time they all agreed, and one confessed that he liked to go to the movies and would sneak away when he wasn't around the church. The second confessed that he liked to smoke cigars, and the third one confessed that he liked to play cards. When it came to the fourth one, he wouldn't confess, and the others pressed him, saying, "Come on now, we confessed our secret sins. What's your vice?" "Well," he said, "my greatest sin is gossiping, and I can hardly wait to get out of here." One of the greatest sources of damage in the kingdom of God is gossip, and telling or retelling half-truths or partial accuracies can do great harm. Such was the case in life, and such is the case with our friend Nehemiah. And as we look to our study this morning, Nehemiah was able to look to the gossip that was being spread, see through the half-truths for what they were, and remain strong in his devotion to the task at hand. This morning we continue in our summer preaching series, looking to the life and mission of Nehemiah. Just as a little recap, we remember that the series began with Nehemiah confronted with the state of disrepair for Jerusalem. He prayed and waited for some 4 months before God began to open the door for intervention. Then through an amazing chain of events only God himself could have orchestrated, the king noticed that there was a change in Nehemiah's countenance. And seeking God's direction, Nehemiah wisely and carefully shared his burden with the king. Moved by God's hand, the king asked Nehemiah what he wanted to do. And under God's provision and direction, Nehemiah laid out his plan for reconstruction. God was clearly working, moving in the heart of the king to answer in such a favorable manner. What's more, the king provided the resources needed, letters of introduction, and even guards to provide for safe travel. And in the chapters that followed, we witnessed Nehemiah return to Jerusalem, assess the state of affairs, and begin to implement a plan of action. In the next several chapters, we found each and every person called forward to serve. And you may remember that study where the goldsmiths were serving alongside the farmers, perfumers were working with blacksmiths, and in due time, the walls were partially restored and the gates were being rebuilt. And at this point, the enemy reared their ugly head and started to bring accusations against Nehemiah. Determined to undermine what God was doing, the enemy did their best to thwart this rebuild project. But Nehemiah, led of God, showing great wisdom, was not about to be distracted from his project. Assigning each family a portion of the wall adjacent to their home, calling each worker to grasp a spear in one hand and a trowel in the other, they equipped themselves for whatever thing that might confront them. The scriptures tell us that men from the countryside came to assist in the labor, and they worked by day and stood guard by night. No thought was given to the sense of exhaustion, no concern paid to the empty threats from their enemies. Shoulder to shoulder, supporting each other, the one common goal in mind, the people of Jerusalem stood firm in their determination to rebuild their city's walls and gates. And in our most recent study, we had that public outcry due to the mistreatment of the people. The wealthier Jewish families within the region were charging interest on debts owed and money that was borrowed. The king had also added insult to injury by putting a massive tax on the people. Not about to allow this to go unaddressed, Nehemiah called his wealthy folks together, rebuked them, and demanded they repay any they took advantage of. And with that crisis corrected, the work again continued. And as we come to today's portion of the text, we see that the task is nearing completion. Now this would be a great source of joy and excitement for Nehemiah and his people. But as a result, the enemy was doing everything in their power to thwart these final days of the project. In verse 6, we had read to us, and it talked about them coming and inviting Nehemiah to come. Let us meet together among the villages of the plain of Ono. Notice how the enemy is still determined to undermine the work of Jeremiah. Sounding like they wanted to make peace, eager to come across friendly, they suggest a public gathering in the regions outlying the city. But Nehemiah, showing great wisdom, responded in the negative, "But they intended to do me harm." You see, Nehemiah, led of God, directed by God, empowered by God, was a man of discernment. He was able to see that the false statements of the enemy were all about. One writer defines discernment as the ability to judge matters according to God's view of them and not according to their outward appearance. Nehemiah was clearly able to employ this skill. Then it comes on and it says, I sent a messenger to them saying, I am doing a great work and I cannot come down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and come down to you? See, Nehemiah, sensing the call on his life, eager to see the work completed, he's not easily convinced to get distracted. But they didn't stop there. It says they persisted four times in this manner, and he always answered in the same way. Notice the persistence of these men. They were determined to get the better of Nehemiah. They were eager to undermine his work and see things fall apart. They were not about to give up on their own pursuit. If a simple invitation wasn't enough, the next step was to bring some gossip, some half-truths, some bold-faced lies into the mix. It says, in the same way, Sanballat, for the fifth time, sent servants to him with an open letter in his hand. And it was written in this report, it is reported among the nations, and Geshem also says so. Now, to get full intent of what's happening here, we need a little explanation. An open letter was one that was written at its original location, and then because it was not sealed, it remained open and would be read in every public venue possible. So it was basically a public letter read and spread throughout the region, and the content of the letter was equal concern. It says it was reported among the nations, and Geshem also said. See, the enemy is building his argument. There we go. I knew it would come eventually. He's building his, he's stressing it. It's an open letter, including the name of the nations and including the name of another respected man. If one person was good, a nation is better, and will attach other names to it to build its credibility. And having laid out the basis for these accusations, the letter continues with false charges against Nehemiah. It says, it's reported among the nations, and Geshem also says so, that you and the Jews intend to rebel. That's why you're building the wall. And according to these reports, you wish to become king. And you also have set up prophets to proclaim concerning you in Jerusalem. There is a king in Judah. Now listen to the falsehoods in this passage. You and the Jews intend to rebel. Up until this point, there's no mention of Nehemiah trying to cause trouble. According to these reports, you wish to become king. Again, this is a false accusation. There's nothing to back it up. It was assumed that Nehemiah would return to his work with King Artaxerxes when the project was completed. You have set up prophets to proclaim you in Jerusalem. Again, this was just a false statement. Then it went on and said, no such things as you say have been done, for you inventing them in your own mind. For they all wanted to frighten us, thinking their hands will drop from the work and it will not be done. But you, O God, strengthen my hands. Simply put, Nehemiah called Sanballat a bold-faced liar. Nehemiah saw through his veiled attempts to undermine their determination and stop the work. Again, Nehemiah brought the matter before the Lord. But now, O God, strengthen my hands. As though to say, Lord, get me through this. Give me the strength to carry on in spite of this nonsense. And reading on, we aren't given a great deal of information regarding his next challenge. All we know is that he was invited to go to a man's house, and they were talking about closing the doors, meeting in the temple and closing the doors of the temple, and he could find that as a safe place to be. But again, a little history needs to be shared here. Nehemiah was a godly man, but he was not a priest. As such, he had no business being in the temple. It was suggested that Nehemiah was in danger and this would be a safe place for him to take refuge. Had he done that, he would have been disobeying God. And reading on, we see that Nehemiah was quick to see the falsehoods and send this other statement. And I understand and saw that God had not sent him, but had pronounced the prophecy against him because Sanballat and Tobiah had hired him. And it goes on and talks about the trouble they were trying to cause and how they'd even set up a prophetess to speak words about Nehemiah. Well, this self-appointed prophet was on the payroll of Nehemiah's enemies, clearly not someone to listen to. And the passage concludes with Nehemiah offering yet another prayer of sorts. He calls out to God, requesting that he remember Nehemiah and Sanballat according to their actions. In other words, Lord, judge them for their reprehensible behavior. So here we have another step in the building project, one step closer to the final completion. The walls are erected, people are rejoicing, only the hanging of the gates was finished. But again, the enemy is still rearing his ugly head. He's still trying to bring about the fall or distract them from the task at hand. So in verse 15 it says, "So the wall was finished on the 25th day of the month of Elul in 52 days. Now think about this for a moment. For over 100 years have passed since the initial destruction of the walls and gates of Jerusalem. Attempts had been made, but none were brought to completion. Finally, one man, a man who prayed, who waited, who trusted and believed in God, witnessed this amazing chain of events all come together. This man was under attack. He suffered falsehoods and bold-faced lies. He had his character challenged and his motives questioned. This man was pulled in countless directions, but throughout it all, he remained faithful to his God, and God was faithful to him. In a record 52 days, the walls were restored. 52 days, Jerusalem was no longer an embarrassment or a failure. When the wall was completed, there was great rejoicing with God's people, but their enemies were greatly angered." In verse 16 it says, "And when all our enemies heard it, all the nations around us were afraid and fell greatly in their own esteem, for they perceived that this work had been accomplished with the help of our God." Notice how the completion of the wall did not bring accolades to Nehemiah, but rather the glory was given to God. He received the recognition, he received the praise. And looking to the final verse of the chapter, we see that even with the completion of the wall, the enemy was still at work. Letters were being written, accusations were being made, family manipulation was still present. And despite his devotion to God, Nehemiah found himself under attack, false statements and manipulation. So what do we take away from this next leg in his reconstruction project? Well, I want to look at some life lessons to remember. We need to practice discernment. We need to reject fear and slander, and we need to persevere for God's glory. First of all, practice discernment. Great preacher and writer Charles Spurgeon is quoted as saying, "Discernment is not simply a matter of telling the difference between right and wrong. It's the difference between right and almost right." Think about that. Discernment is not a matter of simply telling the difference between right and wrong. It's the difference between right and almost right. Discernment comes from a Latin word meaning to sift or distinguish. Discernment in its simplest form is the ability to judge well. In the context of the Christian faith, it's the ability to distinguish truth from error, right from wrong, and ultimately God's will from our own or the world's. It's a spiritual gift, a divine endowment that is crucial for our spiritual growth and maturity. But why do we need discernment? Why is it so important in our Christian walk? We're living in a world where there's a myriad of voices, each clamoring for our own attention and allegiance. These voices come in various forms, in media, in culture, in family, in friends, even our own thoughts or desires. Some of these voices may appear good and beneficial on their surface, but they do not align with God's truth and His will for our lives. Without discernment, we can easily be swayed by these voices, leading us astray from the path that God has intended for us. We require discernment to navigate the complexities of life. Life is not always black and white. There are gray areas, dilemmas, and tough decisions we have to make, and in such situations, discernment helps us to make wise decisions that remain in line with God's will. It enables us to see beyond the surface, understand the underlying issues, and make choices that honor God and promote peace and justice and love. In our study text this morning, we found Nehemiah confronted with several obstacles. First was the invitation to leave the work he was called to and travel into the countryside for an impromptu meeting. Knowing in his heart this was not wise, unsure of what the enemy was up to, relying on God's direction, Nehemiah had discernment enough to reject the invitation. When the invitation of this meeting didn't work, the next came a letter with a lot of false accusations. Again, Nehemiah could have put down his agenda and run off to address the false claims, but discernment was present and active in his heart and life. He saw through the matters at hand and brought the matter to the Lord in prayer and continued on with his work. Now, possibly more than any time in history, we need to be people of discernment. Discernment for what is taught in our churches. As I'm sure most of us have noticed, not every preacher on TV is necessarily presenting the full and accurate counsel of God. We need discernment regarding decisions our governments are making, decisions in what we choose to believe and what we stake our lives upon. Nia demonstrated in a powerful way that we as believers living in the days of uncertainty need to practice discernment. Excuse me. The Apostle Paul speaks of this in his letter to the third church in Thessalonica. Do not despise prophecies, but test everything. Hold fast to good. What is good, abstain from every form of evil. Test everything. And in his letter to the church in Philippi, it is my prayer that your love may abound more and more with knowledge and all discernment. We need to test what we're hearing to see if it's from God. We need to pray for God's discernment when we make life decisions. Discernment needs to be something we seek after and seriously pursue. Secondly, we need to reject fear and slander. Think back to Nehemiah. His project was coming under attack. He was constantly being challenged. Verbal assaults were frequent. It would have been easy for him to get discouraged and distraught over all that was being said. In our most recent study, we see there was an attempt to distract him by encouraging him to attend some alleged meeting. There's a written letter circulated throughout the countryside. There's words of prophecy spoken regarding his actions. All of these items might have caught him off guard. All of these items might have brought grief to his heart and discouragement to his convictions. Look at a few of the comments in the passages, comments that would cause anyone to get anxious. It's reported among the nations, and Geshem also says it. But what's that? Well, people are saying, and you know, so-and-so said this. And we can all figure out who the so-and-so most likely was. It's interesting how nameless people can get credit for many things, but a name is required. But when a name is required, they're not near as vocal. Many years ago, how many years ago since we were up north? 1995, we moved up there, so that's a while ago. Anyway, we served in a church in Northern Ontario for 9 years, and the church had gone through a split just prior to our arrival, and the wealthiest families had left and started a new church a mile down the road. So figure how awkward that was. Needless to say, there was no trust remaining in the congregation when we arrived. And shortly after I arrived, I was introduced to the communication box. It was a wooden box fastened to the wall at the entrance of the church. And each month, the church leadership team, and please don't get this as a suggestion, the church leadership team would meet, and the first item on the agenda was to open the box and review the letters that were confined in the box. Well, after a month or two, I noticed the theme. Each month, there was this long list of complaints regarding something as simple as the temperature in the sanctuary or how many verses we sang in a particular hymn. Some were rather simple, others were downright nasty because it was pointing fingers and complaining about certain people. The part that caught my attention was that none of these letters were signed. Well, being young and not terribly patient, I raised the issue after a couple of months and I said, why are we wasting our time on complaints when people don't have the backbone to sign them? And it made people scratch. Well, we've always done it that way. Well, so just doesn't mean it's right. And so it took a little while, a little bit of wrestling through the method, the meat of it. But we finally put forward a decision that only letters that had a legible signature on them would be recognized by the church council. From that point on, we would meet every month. The box would be open. The letter would be open. The secretary would scan the letter to see if there was a signature. If there was a signature, we would read it and address it. If there was no signature, it wasn't read. It was ripped up and thrown away. And the funniest thing was, as soon as we implemented that process, what happened to the number of letters? Right? You know, it's easy to get sidetracked from God's plans for our life by listening to gossip or slander. And that brings us to our third point. We need to persevere for God's glory. Think again for our text for a moment. The walls were finally completed. The task to be attempted is almost finished. Celebrations are in the future. And the enemy is still rearing his ugly head. An attempt to pull Nehemiah away from his work. On countless occasions, he could have been distracted. He could have wandered from the task and attended this meeting. He could have got caught up in a debate over the accusations about his leadership. He could have been pulled into the discussions about appointing prophets, but he didn't. Time and again, he handled things in the same manner. Time and again, when pressure was on, he reminded himself of God's presence. He offered prayers for wisdom or discernment. He proclaimed God's goodness, and he persevered. Life is not easy. Life as a Christian, living in an unchristian world, can be downright hard sometimes. We can get easily sidetracked or discouraged. We can easily allow ourselves to become overwhelmed with the unchristian influences around us. Nehemiah was pulled in many directions, but he remained true to the calling upon his life, and he remained faithful to his God. What calling has God placed on your life at this point in time? What role are you called to fill when you're being used on God's behalf? Maybe it's in your family as a prayer warrior or an encourager or a source of wisdom. Maybe you have a role in the church or some role in the community. Whatever it is, expect to have seasons of opposition. Let us go forward learning today from the example of Nehemiah. Let us practice discernment. It's something that we have to grow with. Let us reject fear and slander. And finally, as it's so interesting, that's how the chapter finishes up. It talks about preserving, persevere for God's glory. When it was said and done, even the enemy recognized that God was at work, and God was giving them the victory. Let's pray.